still rolling in. We're at 38.
That's good. We still have more people coming in. Again, if you just log in, we won't be. We went to the attendance poll, to the chat and your email. Make sure you log in your EKU account so you can mark that you're present. Give a couple more minutes so that everybody can check their chat and email to mark their attendance.
44.
My goal is to try to get everybody out of here as soon as possible, with it being the Monday after Thanksgiving and the end of the year. Moving on to the next item, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes for November 3rd?
I had a question, though. Sorry, this is Senator Stevenson.
Yes, Senator Stevenson.
When I open the file, there's lots of words that are smushed together and looks, it just looks very weird. Is it, does that do that for anybody else, or is that just my?
I'm seeing some heads no. I see some heads yes. It might be a Google Doc issue that we can take a note of and fix it. If it's a formatting thing, I'll take a note of it.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks.
Is this something that we can table until it gets fixed and then vote on it at the next meeting? That way we can get a clean list at it. Yeah. Can I get a motion to table the approval of November minutes so we can check on the formatting of it before we go ahead and sign off on that?
So
moved. Senator Day.
Second.
Senator Satimi, any discussion?
Just a question. I'm seeing the issue, just some words have been jammed together. It's probably a Google Docs issue.
Sure.
But I don't see a substantive issue. Is there a problem with just approving the minutes and we will go through and add spaces where necessary, is just an editorial change later? Is that gonna cause a problem with the parliamentary procedure or something else?
So Senator Howell, Senator Day.
I just now was able to open the minutes.
Okay.
So I haven't been able to open the document before a few minutes ago.
Gotcha.
I don't know if anybody else is in that position.
Yeah, I had the email for permission.
Right. No
point of order. It's been seconded. There's no discussion on the table.
Well, that was my, was that a,
sorry, you asked for a discussion on the motion to table and I was making discussions.
There's
yes.
No motion.
You can't discuss on the motion.
Okay. So it received a second. Take a vote.
It was a second.
Okay.
Now we vote on it. We can vote it down.
All right. Post it to vote in the chat or email. Again, the motion would be to table it so we can fix the formatting and or any issues that are found and revisit the vote or the motion to approve the minutes for the next meeting.
I think I added it before I sent it out. Vote to table and fix formatting. X is probably fixed.
What's that?
It was linked to the older guy fixed though.
Okay.
33.
All right, passed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on to administrative reports. Is President McFadden in the online space?
Chair Brent,
President McFadden was caught late in a meeting somewhere else, so he will not be able to join us today unless his meeting miraculously got through sooner, but I've never had that happen to anyone.
Gotcha. And we'll move on to Provost, your report, which is linked for everybody to review.
Yes, and the link was working as of this morning, so hopefully you were able to take a look at it. I've provided a lot of updates on some wonderful things the colleges are doing, some achievements from our faculty and our students, as well as some informational items on the fall 2026 schedule build. I won't reiterate all of that because I know you can look at it for yourselves, but I do want to direct your attention to some of the information on the Thank a Professor event that is run out of the Faculty Center for Teaching and Learning. You see some excerpts from the student comments and some themes delineated there, and they are really quite compelling and even heartwarming. So I encourage you to have a look at those. Many of you were also thanked by students and should have your recognitions. So it's really a testament to our faculty that the students are responding in this way and that so many students are nominating their faculty. I have one quick thing to say to you. I am aware that there's weather and that there may be some snow, ice, wintry mix, sleet, or whatever combination of terrible winter conditions that might come to pass tomorrow morning. I'm actually, as soon as I finish with you, going to get on a call about whether we are going to need to take some measures with relation to that weather in terms of whether we go to the online format or virtual format for the university. So I will attend to that and then text Chair Brent so that you will have the information as soon as I do on what the plan is. Obviously, we want to keep you and everyone else safe as we deal with one of these first nasty winter storms. So at that, I will stop and hear from you, and then I will hop on to that other meeting.
Questions from the
crowd? Chair.
I will, Senator Jansky, yes, I see that. I will talk to the president about that when I meet with him on Wednesday. All of your chairs did receive information on the report, so an immediate measure you can take is to go to your chairs and ask them for those details.
Anybody else in the online space or in person? Provost, do you mind taking a minute and updating us on the 4-day instruction week? I know it's a item for later in the agenda, and you are much more positioned to talk about kind of the updates given that scheduling is getting rolled out, to hear it straight from you by any chance.
Of course, and that is at the top of my report. So we are going forward with a 4-day instructional week with a lot of caveats and exceptions. I've been working with the registrar on exactly how to build the fall schedule, and we'll send a communication out to chairs, associate deans, and deans tomorrow morning as soon as I've made sure all of those details are correct. So the essential way we're going to do this is that the Tuesday, Thursday patterns and the Monday, Wednesday patterns will be the same in timing and length. So, for those of you who teach on both patterns, you'll be doing the same thing for all of the days of the week. For clinical experiences, lab, other experiential learning, there will need to be some custom time blocks. And the only condition that the registrar asked me to put on that was to please, please have them all start at the standard start time so that when there's a non-custom time, it only takes up two class blocks for scheduling rather than three or more. Any of those custom time blocks for those types of schedule. Those schedule types of classes will be approved at the college level, so you will not have to come to my level to seek the approvals for non-standard time blocks as happened this semester. Again, all of that communication will go out. One thing that's particularly important to remember for the students, especially, is that it is a 4-day instructional week with significant exceptions if you have to do experiential learning, and also that faculty may certainly have field activities or other activities on Friday that they expect students to participate in. So I'm working hard on the messaging to students so that they don't get irritated with the faculty members who are just doing what they need to do to get the students through the classes. So more communication on that tomorrow morning.
Perfect. Thank you, Provost.
Absolutely.
Anybody else? All right. Well, Provost, oh,
Chair
any
Brent,
comments?
I see that Senator Pierce put something in the chat. So there should be sufficient time blocks. And if there aren't, we're going to work with those on a case-by-case basis. Basically, we will make sufficient time blocks to accommodate the labs. And remember that the labs can be scheduled all 5 days of the week. They are not limited to Friday.
I have a question as to that, and that is, what if you have a 2.5 hour lab? Are you basically taking over three time blocks for a 2.5 hour lab, which I have with two different courses, immunology and virology? So they go from right now 2:30 to 5:15. That would be three different lab sessions, three different time blocks.
Yes, that could
That
certainly
is
happen.
not something that can move to nighttime, and it is also not something I can move to Fridays.
Okay, understood. And yes, in those cases, we will have to have them take more time blocks. The most important thing is to get the students what they need. And I also forgot to mention that on the schedule rollover, all of the associate deans have logged the preferences for their colleges, so the schedule will roll over with the closest possible times, with some exceptions in the middle of the day because of how the classes are sequenced. So we are going to make this as easy as possible on chairs and associate deans.
So, if you have a senior who's got three different courses that have 3 hour labs, which is not an impossible situation, they're basically using up basically 9 hours of time block for those three different labs. It's going to be very difficult to fit them into a Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Monday, Wednesday schedule. And I know this has come up a lot in biology, the departmental meetings, because of that. So it is a concern in the sciences. It's a major concern. It's not like we just have lectures. We have so many labs. So, and that, pretty much once we get past the junior level, they are 3 hour labs for each specialty course. So we're gonna be burning through some of those schedules, and we can't move to Fridays. It's just not. Then you'd have students taking all their labs on Fridays, and that's not possible either. So it may be a concern to keep in mind for the future.
All right, I really appreciate that, Senator Pierce, and certainly the deans can approve all of the exceptions.
Do we hear any other questions or comments? Monitoring the chat. All right, hearing none, Provost, we thank you and we look forward to hearing about the inclement weather that may be moving in on us.
I'll keep you posted. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'll turn over the floor to our faculty regent, Senator Noblet.
Hello. I posted a report a little bit shortly before Thanksgiving. People in this room can open it, so hopefully all of you have had a chance to review it. I will not do so, though obviously I'll take questions. The one thing that I did want to point out to make sure that everybody is thinking about this now, because I think it's something that we need to start planning in advance, is how we're going to assist our students with the new BookSmart program. As you'll see from my report, due to changes in federal law, we can no longer have free books for our students. Instead, and it's like any of you that are really interested in why that is, I can walk you through the legislation. I've walked through it several times with the president and Rawson. Legislation is such that it will behoove our students to no longer have free books. They won't understand it. So we will have to be in their stead. I think that it's important to realize a couple of things. First off, the new revised BookSmart program will allow students to have free books, or excuse me, have books for $26 per credit hour. So in effect, that becomes an insurance policy that there'll be a certain set amount that will be the maximum they have to spend on books every year. And then us as faculty, we can do things to assist our students. A lot of us before the pandemic, before BookSmart ever came about, we were doing really creative things like designing our own materials that were absolutely free to our students. We were using old versions of textbooks older editions of textbooks. We were looking for things that were open resource. We were, funding our own development of open resource materials. So I really think it's time that we all get back into that sort of mindset and start thinking about how we can really save our students money on their learning materials. And I think if anybody's up to it, it's definitely faculty that have been inspired to come to a school of opportunity like EKU. I think that's sort of my one bully pulpit moment for the day. Otherwise, I will simply take questions on the report. Yes,
Can you
Senator
just
Leck.
walk through the book smart thing a little more? So
Sure.
students have, they can all choose to opt in for the $26 per credit hour or nothing. And if it's nothing, then they're essentially purchasing their books, correct?
Exactly. It is an opt-in or opt-out program. So what that will mean, let's say a student is taking 15 hours, that means that they will pay 26 times 15, which Senator Brent is quickly multiplying for me. And basically that will be the most that they pay for rentals of their materials. However, and for some students that's going to be a great deal. However, for other students taking other classes, we might be able to do better than that. To be blunt, I've got two kids in college right now, and I don't think either one of them spends $390 a semester. Why? One's an English major, and it seems like everything that he has to read is, like Chaucer or what have you. It's not copyrighted anymore. It's okay. The other person, actually, my other son is a chemistry major, and the faculty at his institution use a lot of really old versions of textbooks. And he actually was told, "Oh, just buy the lab manual for organic chemistry. It could be the, 2017 to 2020 version. I don't care, but something very, very cheap." So he actually was able to buy textbooks that would have been much cheaper than had he walked into a bookstore and bought the new versions. Oh, that's things that we could be doing for our students to help them. So maybe we can beat that $390. So again, that becomes a pretty nice insurance policy, and I think that's the way really students have to think about it. So from the faculty, and we're going to have to identify what our resources are that we need for our classes early enough that students can shop and decide which is a better, better price. You're on Half Price Books or all these, places where you can buy textbooks at highly discounted prices. They may be able to beat 390. Again, I think both my kids beat 390 this semester. But if not, and I know sometimes, engineering, nursing, business, there's some really expensive programs out there. 390 may be the best thing they can do. But if we make sure that we get our resources in on time and we're thoughtful about what they are and assigning them, do you really need the brand new edition, or is the one that was before that okay? Things of that
Senator,
nature.
I'm so sorry. Senator Pierce has a question. What about using a publisher annual license? And then Senator Graham has a question about how it affects the faculty tuition waiver. And then we do have Senator Beekman waiting to answer a question.
Okay, so the publisher annual license, Senator Pierce, I'm not sure. Do you mind coming off the mic and explaining what that?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I know that there are some publishers that offer books across different disciplines, and you can buy, especially for freshmen, they can get I know Cengage does it, I think McGraw-Hill does.
I am familiar with that. Believe it or not, the paralegal program almost went with a Cengage publisher license right before BookSmart came out. We had actually had it approved by an advisory board, and we're approaching our accrediting body when BookSmart was announced, and we're like, well, forget that. We're, let's the sky's the limit on textbooks now.
And
Um,
the
that that
next
would be
thing.
something that perhaps departments could look at. I know there are a
Well,
lot of books that have cohorts that might
that
work. Yeah.
was, I'm not done with my question. What I was trying to say was that, like, the Cengage license can cover freshman biology, freshman English, freshman history. They can cover a certain number of courses, and that happens with several publishers. But my big question really is, what about the whole idea of using the platforms that come with the publishing material? Because we rely a lot on the platforms.
Yeah,
So, for
no,
instance, we
homework,
use,
homework problems, and that sort of thing.
yes, we use
Yeah.
Cengage for one course, we use McGraw-Hill for other courses, and we use extensively their publisher websites, and we can't do that with a used book that is 5 years old.
Okay,
It's just
fair enough,
not
fair enough.
doable.
I mean, I think that's something that maybe Senate needs to look into, and I don't know whether that's academic quality, perhaps that's something that Senator Brent is already written on the board. You can't see over here. That probably is something that a committee needs to look at. I think dealing with the new textbook reality is something that faculty need to take a leadership role in, and obviously send it.
Senator Diekman has a question.
Sure thing. She is raising her hand. Okay.
Yep.
Yes. So I had a question and a comment that are both from students. So the comment is that when this was rolled out, my students had a very negative reaction, and we talked about it in classes because they all asked me about it. And they understand the underlying reasoning given about the Pell Grants and the money situation, but they wanted me to share with whoever can do something about it, that the messaging was handled very poorly, that the letter that went out to students was very condescending and basically told students that they should be grateful that we're doing this because it's going to save them more money than they would otherwise. And it just really hit a wrong note. So maybe we need to talk to our people who send out this messaging to ensure that the messaging does not cause a bigger problem than a change in policy is already going to happen. So that's the comment from the students. The question from the students is about the rental piece and will they still be allowed to purchase their rented books back at a discounted price?
That I will have to get back with you on. I am not sure. I know that the $26 per credit hour is a rental price, and I had always assumed that that buyback would be in there, but let me double check, and I will write to Senator Brent to send out an email to Senate. And in terms of your students' concerns regarding the communication, I don't know if any of them would be willing to write me or meet with me, but I would definitely want to share that with the authors of that, so they make sure that they understand that the tone was not taken, I think, in the way it's intended.
I will reach out to my students and ask them if someone would contact you.
Yeah, I'm also happy to do that anonymously as well. If they want to send it through you, I'm happy to do that.
Senator Graham had a question about the faculty tuition waiver.
Does the waiver now cost us money, also decreasing the value of our employee benefit? Let me first have my ignorance. Was BookSmart on the employee waiver included? Did somebody have? I thought it was only tuition to begin with. So I don't think that if you're on the faculty waiver, you get BookSmart. You never have, and you will continue to not. It's a scholarship that does not run with the tuition waiver. If that makes sense.
One question and a comment. The question is, so my understanding with the current old BookSmart program is that the way it was negotiated, if I individually chose to use one book instead of two, that it didn't matter because of the way it was negotiated, that
the credit hour
was going to be the price. Mm-hmm. And so I could do more. With the new program now, and that, of course, doesn't speak to those that choose to opt out, but under the new program, will there be that sensitivity if faculty individually reduce or increase the number of textbooks?
My understanding is it's still going to be by credit hour production and people who opt in.
But really, the being sensitive to the expense of textbooks really just applies to
trying to beat that
the ones who opt out. The other comment that I have is I think you know, we want to help students. We try to help students, but I think we also have to be aware, at least, of the potential for some faculty senate overreach. Because on this issue, this doesn't directly affect set faculty. This directly affects students. And students have a student government association, and they have a student regent on the board as well. And so I just think we need to just kind of be aware of how broadly our focus extends on some issues.
Fair. And I don't mean to say that $390 is for some reason unobtainable. You know, it's actually a pretty reasonable number. Having been a biochem student one time in my life, but more years ago than I want to admit, I think I actually spent more than that some semesters. But I also didn't live in a world of online access books where I think a lot of things can get a lot cheaper. Again, we just had so many things going on campus 2018, 2019 involving open resources and a whole raft of ways to try to save students money. those all disappeared as soon as Booksmart came around. It may be time to go back to some of those old measures for faculty who can do that. And I agree, we still have to have good learning materials. If you need online homework, what have you, that's a different story. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
And we were going to have a guest speaker. If you all recall, during the last 5% of meeting, the topic of making changes to policies came up, line revisions, what it was going to look like when it actually got posted to the website. I want to let you know that was actually brought to the Problem Solvers Work Group. We talked about that a little bit. We even discussed potentially creating a work group that would work with council's office to kind of figure out what that was going to look like moving forward. I reached out to council's office directly to kind of figure out if somebody would come to Faculty Senate this month to talk about what that process could look like. Backtracking a little bit, I think I failed you all as the chair here. We had a discussion. I didn't have the right people at the table to talk about it during last meeting. So I kind of vowed I didn't want to revisit a conversation unless I gave you the right resources and the answers to have counsel here. So after talking with Dana in the council's office, given everything going on at the end of the year and the SACS report being due by the end of the year, we kind of said, if we want to visit this with the correct bandwidth that it deserves to get the attention that it deserves, it'd be best to postpone that conversation until January so we can kind of figure out what this process and procedure can look like moving forward. So just to give you some context on why, one, the policy discussion isn't fully on the agenda, and two, why council is not on this meeting agenda, it's because we've contacted them directly and that's going to be postponed until January. Pivoting to that, we have some new business items, some policy updates. I know Ethan's on the line. It looks like that the website has been updated from the list that I've been pulling. So I want to extend my thank you to Ethan and all the work being done on the website to update that list. If anybody has any questions or concerns regarding the policy work being done, that's linked as always in that list. Going to our the next biggest item is going to be the essential education or the gen ed model that is coming through. As we all know, it's been kind of going through the approval process. It started with the provost cabinet. It's gotten the okay from the deans. It went through the EETC work group. It got voted through. Chairs took it to their departments. It got over 60% approval, not only for the gen ed model, but also the flex program. And then of course, within that survey was the 4-day instructional week, which we already heard about. I don't want to keep kicking that dead horse. And the more and more we talked about pushing this through, I know today's the vote for Gen Ed during the exec committee, specifically into meetings that we've had throughout, I don't know, how long has this been going? Like a year and a half at this point, maybe a year-ish, give or take. There seems to be two separate things happening here. There's the process and procedures through which this is happening, and then the model that people are, for the most part, agreeing with. They kind of see that it could be a benefit to colleges and departments and students in general, given the current landscape that we're going through. So Senator Howell, during the executive committee meeting, we kind of put our heads together and kind of figured out that maybe when we go to talk about this during today's meeting, we put these things in two different buckets, right? There's the policy and procedures bucket, the way it was communicated to the faculty in our community, and the actual model itself, because those are way two completely different things. So if you don't mind, Senator Howell, did you want to talk about the motion? Do you want to take the floor and I'll get out of your way, or do you want to just go from there?
Yeah, I will take it from here.
Okay, and the link is there. What I'll do is I'll go ahead and pull it open on the screen for us in person. If you click the link, if you're on the online space, it should pull open to a motion. If you do not see that on your screen, when you click it, just let us know and we will problem solve as quick as possible. Go ahead, Senator Howell.
So, do you want me to come up to the front or
whatever you want?
So this is Senator Howell. We've talked a lot about the process for the gen ed reforms. One of the big complaints that has come from some of the faculty from the UJEC committee, which had a very tight vote, it was 10-9 on the final passage because of this. A lot of the griping has been over not following our curriculum development and approval policy, which is policy 1.5.4. If you don't have to bring it up if you don't want to, but policy 1.5.4 provides for how all curriculum changes are done, including program review, which is one of the reasons why this was so critically important, I think, to the faculty. And in 1.5.4, there is a provision for curricular ideas to be developed by outside entities. So coming from the administration, from the provost, or from a working group. And when those things are done, what is supposed to happen is the provost then forwards that curriculum change to departments so that departments can review it, from departments to college curriculum committees, from college curriculum committees to the university, sorry, the university general education committee, the graduate committee, or the teacher education committee, and then from there to CAA and so on down the process. There is also supposed to be documentation provided to allow, this text is actually quoted in the motion. There is supposed to be documentation to allow each step to make an informed and substantive approval and recommendation. And our process has been extremely ad hoc on the EETC proposal. The proposal was made. We had a month to actually look at it. The feedback from departments did not go through curriculum committees. It did not go through any type of regular process. It was surveys thrown together on short notice. And at the end of the day, we have approved a policy that might actually work. Like, I'm on the policy itself. There are a lot of people who think it's gonna work out. But things like the pathways still haven't actually been hammered out. My department has been asking questions like, we now have 6 hours. How are we going to determine what those 6 hours are for? Do we have an automated process for this, or are we going to have to do paperwork? The implication is that our curriculum committee is going to have to sit and actually do a curriculum change form anyway, but that hasn't, we haven't gotten any official word on that. We just haven't been told anything else, but we're voting on it today. And so this is the major procedural concern, is that we haven't gone through the processes that are supposed to be used. And this time around, we might get lucky. If you remember the last time we did program evaluation, we eliminated the economics department, despite it being mentioned numerous times at Faculty Senate, that the economics department was essential to the business school's accreditation. After it was eliminated, we then discovered that it was essential to the business school's accreditation, and it was brought back as part of the business school. And if we'd actually had a process that allowed all the curriculum committees to make these kinds of statements and give this input early on, we would have ended up in the same place. It would have been a lot less stress and fight. Because of that, we wrote this policy. I know some of the people who were involved on this. It was a big fight specifically to deal with this issue and other issues. It was approved in May of 2024. And we're a year and a half later, and we're ignoring it again and ending up in the same place where, what are we doing with these 6 hours? We don't know. So this one just, it's gone by the plate, right? It's too late to swing at it. The timeline didn't work out for it. But going forward, we have this policy, and we should really use it. And so that is what this motion, this resolution is intended to communicate to the Board of Regents, that maybe this curriculum change that didn't go through the right process is going to work out, and it's okay, and it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be a huge deal. But we do have this process. It does exist, and we should follow it. And in particular, I think part five is the most important thing, which we need to be thinking about what the reports coming out of these committees look like. This is not a today problem. This is a, we need to worry about this in the future. There is supposed to be documentation so that people can make informed and substantive approvals and recommendations. A lot of CAA paperwork, we've been complaining about this for years, a lot of CAA paperwork is very bare bones. A lot of reporting that comes out of the college curriculum committees and the departmental curriculum committees is very bare bones. The faculty also need to step up and do these reports so that the information gets communicated to the Board of Regents. But the Board of Regents also needs to make sure that we are going through the process when we're trying to build these reports, that the reports don't exist this time because we didn't go through the process. That's not the faculty's fault. Next time, it needs to go through the process. And if the faculty don't produce those reports, that's the faculty's problem. We need to fix that. And so that is my presentation of the amendment. And I'm happy to take questions here. You know, and if people want to make amendments to this resolution, I'm perfectly happy to hear them.
Point of order, what process do we follow? We have to vote on this and then discuss it, or?
So it's a motion that would require a second.
So this is a motion, and then we can discuss after it's been seconded.
I'll second.
I will second the motion.
So I got a second from Senator Satini, and was that Senator Liddell as well? Did you?
Yes, either way.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Satini?
Okay, so what's to prevent this same thing from happening again? Is it there's nothing to stop the administration from doing the same thing again, is there? I mean, or should there be something in here that says it doesn't happen, we should not even participate, or what? I mean, is there something to stop the administration from doing the same thing again?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I'm asking a question.
Yes. I just didn't want to step on your question.
Senator Howell isn't responding.
Yeah, so this is Senator Howell responding. A resolution, we're an advisory body. The Senate is an advisory body. We don't have the authority to control the curriculum by ourselves. What a resolution like this can do is it's public. It is something that Regent Noblet can take to the Board of Regents. That has more to it than one of my faculty members complained to me, or I've had many conversations. It is these are the specific issues that the Faculty Senate debated and discussed and voted on. And it is then up to the Board of Regents how they wish to respond to that, whether they wish to instruct the administration to behave in different ways, or if they ultimately don't care. And if the Board of Regents ultimately doesn't care, there's not much we can do about it. But we are an advisory body, and this is our mechanism. This is the only mechanism at the present time I can see for us to advise the Board of Regents in any formal way.
Senator Notway?
I'm not sure who I'm asking this question of, mm-hmm. but I have heard from multiple members of UJEC mm-hmm. that the essential education proposal was presented at the meeting where there was the I think you said 10 to 9
vote. 10 to 9.
Before that vote took place, and there was vigorous discussion about essential education, the members of UJEC were told by the associate provost that regardless of how they voted, this was going on the CAA.
That is correct.
And that's deeply alarming. I mean, it sort of speaks to what you're saying here, but I mean, is that one of the things that is meant to, because to Senator Satimi's point, I mean, if that's true, that nullifies the tremendous amount of work that UJEC has done, to say nothing of how to prevent that from other university level and college level committees from having the same level of insignificance.
Yes, this is Senator Howell again. I agree this is a concern. The Board of Regents controls the university. So all we can do is appeal to the Board of Regents to, you know, as I said, we are an advisory body. The only person who can tell the president to do anything is the Board of Regents. We don't have that power. Yes, the CAA going ahead after UJEC, we had a motion to investigate for 2 more weeks, try and get something on paper, and the associate provost said it's going forward anyway. That is the reason why, for the line in part 5 about reports must accompany to CAA prior to a vote on curriculum matters. If the Board of Regents doesn't care about this, then the Board of Regents doesn't care about this. But right now, there is no formal thing going to the Board of Regents talking about this. If we do a motion like this, Regent Noblet can take it to the Board of Regents, and the Board of Regents can say, yes, we actually do think the faculty should have some say in this. So yeah, in the future, we don't want to see reports from CAA that don't have college or departmental curriculum reports attached to them. That is within their purview to do, but it's not in our purview to recommend it. All we can do is advise the regents that this is something that we think is necessary. Does that make sense?
What you're saying makes sense. The situation does not make sense.
Senator Satine?
Another question. So policy 1.5.4, was it violated in this process? And if it is violated, is there any recourse or is there no sense in having policies?
I have personal opinions on that. This is Dr. Howell again. I have personal opinions on that, but I am not specialized in this area of law. And I would therefore not feel comfortable giving an answer to that question in this forum. And that's all I can really say on that. But it is a good question.
This is Senator Brent. So is this to put action on it, right? So we can talk about this, but I always want to move towards like, okay, let's try to make it better, right? It seems like most of the concern about Jenna development, the ETC, wasn't about the model itself. It was about the process and procedures that this was going through. A lot of people seem to be in agreement with the model, seem to be in agreement with the move to what's being proposed. It's just the process and procedure. So I say all that to say, is this something that we need to take an action step on and say anytime that something's occurring that regards curriculum development, that we formally introduce this to the body that's looking to change curriculum and have it documented that we said, hey, this is the policy on this. We're advising you to follow the policy. At that point in time, you can follow the policy or not. As I tell my kids, I recommend you to not do that. And if you do it and you get burned, then that's on you. I told you not to do it. I did my part. I did my dad thing. And you still did it and got burned. Is this something that we just get ahead of? And anytime there's a curriculum change, we put it on a formal writing saying, hey, we advised that you follow the policy on this. At that point in time, you follow the policy or not. And that way, when it goes all the way through, not only does Regent Noblet get to talk about it to the Board of Regents, it's not after the fact. We have proactive, hey, we got ahead of this and said, hey, here's the policy. So is this something that we can action ahead of time when these things get proposed, saying we have a policy that can guide this? Whether you want to follow it or not, that's kind of your call. I'm just trying to create like an actual tangible to make process and procedures more efficient and effective moving forward. Is that something that we is a
question?
I have
Senator Bishop Ross.
I'm not getting that one. Can you, Senator Bishop Ross? I see your hand up.
Yes, I'd like to speak in favor of voting on this motion as it stands so that this body sends a message to the Board of Regents that while we may like the changes that were made, policies were not followed. And they need to be aware that we have policies in place that were not followed and that this kind of thing should not happen again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. We have a motion to vote on it as is. Do I hear a second?
We already hit it.
Michael.
No, that was in favor.
I thought that was okay. All right, so we take it to question.
Being posted in the email and the chat.
And again, that's going to be posted to chat in your email. If it doesn't come through, please let us know so we can problem solve as quick as possible.
About halfway then.
Okay.
We have 31 and 96% have already said yay.
Yep, and that passes. All right, so motion passes. So next steps on this, do you think that there's a way where we can, with the exec or the problem solvers group, find a way to implement a standard operating procedure to get the policy ahead of curriculum changes to formally introduce and say, hey, we've proposed this. That way something actually gets actioned on this. That's something that I think we can follow up at the exec level and then follow up on. How about that? Senator Howell?
Just to, I've obviously had lots of time to think about this.
That's one.
I think following up in exec and problem solvers is the right place to go. The provost does have the authority to refer this stuff. And as I read the policy, she can refer it fairly broadly. Because it says to college curriculum committees, but it also says to ad hoc groups, working groups, or other interested units of the university. So I think the problem solvers might be a good way to go through this when something is coming down from anywhere that's not already going to hit the departments.
Okay.
The provost has the ability to say, this proposal has been made by EETC. Awesome. I am going to forward it to all the departmental curriculum committees. And if that had been done back in October, I think we have a much different conversation that is not meant to be a criticism. I didn't read the document. I didn't read the policy until November myself. But like, if we'd been on the ball back in October, this would have been a much easier conversation because the provost could have just said, "Hey, under policy 1.5.4, I have the ability to refer this to the departments, and I'm doing that."
So we can action that. And then what we'll do is I also see Senator Jose Juan, your hand up.
Yes, a quick question just for clarification, Senator Gomez. Were chairs asked about this? I remember a conversation, I think, in last Senate meeting where it was discussed that chairs were asked about these changes. And I just want to make sure that that's in our radar so that I mean they were at one point faculty was through the chairs, right?
Oh, absolutely. So what we're taking question on is not everything that happened after the fact, is how it got started. So yes, it went to the chairs, it went to the provost cabinet, the deans did weigh on it, the ETC group weighed in on it, it went through UJEC, it went to the chairs. So like what we're getting at is there's two different buckets that we're going to talk about. There's the policy and procedures bucket on how the proposal to change gen ed and the process through which it occurred happened. And then the actual faculty involvement, the model that seems to be getting support, those are two different buckets. What you're talking about, it sounds like, is the second or the latter part, which has gotten support, did get feedback, did have faculty input, did get faculty voice when there was enough time to do so, and was approved at every level so far. What Senator Howell is proposing is that there's been a disconnect between what the policy is saying that should have been done and what was actually done to start the curriculum development and change. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Perfect. Well, Senator Howell, thank you for proposing that. With that, we'll go ahead and forward this motion and this resolution on to the administration so that's on record. Regent Nobbett, we'll also make sure you have it so that when we go to the next board meeting, you can present that as is. And we will take follow-up steps to make sure that this policy gets put out ahead of time before curriculum changes occur. That way, they know it's on the radar. This is the policy that needs to be followed through. That way, it's not just left as a conversational piece, that we can actually action something moving forward. So, thank you for that.
We have a comment in the chat.
Comment in the chat. Let me go to this. I have just a clarification. CAA did ask to table the EE proposal, but the motion to so failed. Got it. Thank you, S Senator Poffenberger. All right. Any other items on this matter, or can we pivot to the next bucket of this topic? All right. Next, we're going to go ahead and move on to voting on the essential education. Now, this is the second bucket that, again, we're calling it's gone through the provost cabinet. It went through the chairs. Deans talked about it, the provost cabinet got support there. EETC voted on it. That was the initial step. UJEC, it went through there. And this is kind of as we talked about an advisory body. And I know a lot of the concern has been happening about the policy and procedures of this. So I wanted to make sure that those two things were handled separately. I'm glad that we're actioning something on the first part. Thank you again, Senator Howell, for doing that. Today's the day where we're actually going to talk through EETC and take it to vote as far as our advisory purview to this matter. So is there a motion to vote to approve the new general education model as put forward by the Essential Education Transformation Committee team?
We have a question
Good question.
from the chat, and then we also have someone with their hand raised.
So question. We voted on resolution. Did it pass? Yes, my apologies. It did pass. Senator Diekman, thank you for that question. And then I also don't see a hand up.
Was Senator Bishop Paulson.
Senator Bishop Ross, did you have your hand up? My apologies.
I was just going to bring attention to Melissa's comment if nobody saw it.
Thank you. So is there a motion to vote on the new gen ed model, the essential education model?
So moved, Senator Humphrey.
Senator Humphrey, do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Second by Senator Howell. Any discussion regarding the actual essential education? Senator Austin.
Just a quick question on the central education FAQ for faculty and staff that's linked. And we're
would be
like the informational.
Okay, let me pull it open. There we go. Yes. So now this is one of the first ones that was pushed out. It's kind of been updated since, but this is like one of the very first FAQs that I just wanted something up to kind of orient our conversation.
Okay, so maybe that it might not even be a problem.
But perfect. What was what?
Well, the first question says that essential education maintained the same 30-hour credit structure, but it's reduced from 36 to 30, and then it says later,
so
it's reducing it. We are.
So credit structure, unless I'm getting it right, we're still talking about the same 120 hours that's actually being mandated at the state level. What's actually changing is the number of gen ed hours. Yes.
So one place it says we're keeping it at 30, but the other place it's on the same document says we're reducing from 36 to 30. So it's just, it's more just it's a contradiction. So I just want to make.
Right. Yeah. So it was at 36. Now we're moving down to 30. But the overall structure of overall credit hours, I think, that's not changing.
Right. But yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're 100%. Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. That makes sense.
Any other discussion items? Senator Howell?
Senator Howell here. I just note at the bottom, there's an AI acknowledgement, which is good practice. But if you want to tell your students, like, this is why you don't do an AI without checking it, this would be an example of that. On the document itself, I've been ambivalent about this pretty much from the get-go. 30 hours or 36 hours is not a huge change for me. I will say I have done my own investigations and spoken with people from health science and spoken with people from education who do believe and have, especially over in education, they have some very lovely spreadsheets documenting how this will help their students finish in 120 hours. And I really appreciate the work that the undergraduate curriculum coordinators have done in those departments to see how this would integrate their work. So there's been a lot of good work over there. And I just want to share that with the group that they have done investigations of how this will help their students. And I think that should be appreciated.
And I can echo that after talking with specific units across campus, the move to 30 and the 6 hours, even the flex three, if we go that route, would offer departments that don't have a lot of electives the capability of increasing their front porch to bring in enrollment retention records to the departments. It's going to offer more of a competitive landscape for students. It's going to fit within the 120 hours that's being pushed down by legislation. So again, it just seemed like as we went through this process, there was this blurring between process and procedure and the model. And the more we were able to fine tune, it seems like a lot of the thorn was about process and procedure with a lot of departments and colleges realizing or understanding that this may be a benefit to their overall programs and their efficiencies moving forward, given what's happening at state level and all through the country, essentially, with standardized curriculum coming down, and we don't have to keep filling in that line. But any other discussion items? Senator Satini.
Just a quick comment that although some people may think that this works for them, it hasn't been through any of our curriculum committees, so we don't know.
Yeah, hence by Senator Howell's resolution, I think is going to be paramount moving forward. And again, I told you not to touch the stove. You want to touch it, you didn't follow. Hey, that's on you at that point. And then we can double down on it later, like you said it ahead of time. So I do thank you again for putting that resolution forward. So it would have gotten more. Senator Yoder.
Yeah, this is Senator Yoder. I'm still really frustrated with the program. I feel it in my soul, right, that you get to teach more courses, right, in your own discipline. Everybody wants to do that. But, right, we have a responsibility as an institution, right, to provide a bachelor's degree, right? And just because the community colleges can do this in 30 hours doesn't mean we should. And at a certain point, you just have to dig in and say, no, a bachelor's degree means more than this. And I would just like to see any academic argument for this. I didn't hear anybody quote the mission of general education. So I'm going to do that right now. The mission of general, this is the EKU statement. This is EKU's statement, right? So that should have been the headline on all these processes, right? The mission of general education is to promote learning that is central to the intellectual pursuits associated with our educational programs and to enable students to make informed choices about matters of public and personal significance in a democratic society and global community. The general education program helps students become informed, independent thinkers by developing competencies in communication, quantitative analysis, and critical thinking by helping them understand and appreciate cultures, individuals, the natural environment, and the global society. That is a big mission, right? So if we're going to reduce that by more than 15%, right, how are we going to still fulfill that mission, right, with fewer hours? And there's been nothing about that except, okay, the pathways. And I get that. That could be a really good thing. But there is no administrative support for that. There is no commitment to this.
Right.
The administration has given no commitment to this program, to this change. It's just, okay, faculty, you do it.
Can I do
right?
That?
That's the whole pathway saying, okay, faculty can do that if they want to. If it works, fine. If it doesn't work, fine. Right? That's the whole attitude from administration. I'm going to see some faculty lines. I mean, you're going to cut it 15%. Let's get some faculty lines into those courses, right? Get away from part-time people. And last time I mentioned part-time instruction. There are really good part-time people out there. And I'm not saying that. But if we want them to invest in our program, we need to invest in them. So I would like, can I put a motion to append to this motion, right? That the administration commit to 5 faculty members per year for the next 5 years, specifically oriented to teaching general education courses and reducing the amount of part-time instruction we have in general education courses.
No. So the motion has been made. This is one thing that we need to start thinking about is it's good to bring out motions, but if I correct, they can be amended once, right?
You can amend an amending motion.
Right. So if we're going to bring motions to receive attention, it might be good if we take time and maybe didn't, I'm not saying you didn't, right? But just based off of my poor handling of last faculty kind of meeting with all the motions going around, that we really formulate kind of what we're asking and create next steps for them. So is that something that is going to alter the decision-making on the vote for Gen Ed, or is this something, Senator Yoder, that we can make a motion and say again, because this is, you're hitting on one, something huge that I think is happening nationally. I don't think this is just EKU. We've got universities going to 3-year programs where half of your Gen Ed is now being taken at the high school level, right? And that's everything you talk about just screams what's going on. And then we have universities and legislation streamlining Gen Ed where it's all pretty much mandated, the same credit hours, write down the same course learning objectives, everything. So, and then your other point, it's again, it's process and procedure. Like if we're going to do this, to your point, what resources are going to really be put behind to make sure it's the best new model of Gen Ed that we've come up with? What resources, what faculty lines, what training, what resources, what incentives to develop AI pathways or whatever pathways come forward? So I ask, is this something that we put as an action item to really lean into academic affairs in the university to make sure it gets the support it receives? Like, is this motion going to really alter what's happening here? Go ahead. Yes.
I withdraw the motion, right? I think that's something we need to think about, but the procedure here, you know, is tough, right? But I you know, I don't think, I strongly feel we should not be passing this as is without some commitment from the administration, from the president, from the provost to support what's left, right? They're cutting 15% with the same mission. They're cutting 15% with the same mission and they haven't said, right, that they're gonna support what's left, right? How do we get that kind of commitment from the administration for general education? And that's what, you know, when employers ask for bachelor's degrees, it's not just about program stuff, right? It's about communication skills. It's about problem solving skills. It's about having a broader scope, right, of what education is. Employers want that, right? Our students don't know it, but that's what they want too. But they don't know it. So yes, they want fewer hours, right? And yes, faculty want to teach courses that they worked hard, right, to be able to teach. They want that. But we have a responsibility as a bachelor's degree granting institution, right, to act like it, right? To give students, right, to require that students have some breadth to their knowledge. We want to offer technical degrees. We can do 30 hours or whatever you want, right? That's fine. Let's offer technical degrees. A lot of students want those. But if we're going to offer bachelor's degrees, let's make them bachelor's degrees. None of our benchmarks do 30 hours of general education. All of them, right, are more than 30 hours. And our aspirational benchmarks are way above 30 hours. So this is not, you know, there's no academic argument. No academic argument from them has said, oh, 30 hours is the best. It's the community colleges that are saying, right, 30 hours is the best. It's the technical colleges that are saying 30 hours are the best. And that's who we're taking guidance from.
And now it's being, like, mandated at the state level, almost.
Well, 30 hours is being mandated?
Like, well,
I don't think there's any other institution in the state.
We just have to accept it. We have to accept their structure is coming, which is scary.
Well, we have a responsibility to say that's not right, right? At least.
To hear,
we have a responsibility to fight the fights that need fight.
Is there, right? Is there any other? Yes.
Yeah, this is Senator Nockley. Forgot my own name there. I wanted to lift up something that Senator Howell said earlier about there would have been less stress and conflict if the policy had been followed. But I also want to, stress and conflict can be good. We used to call that Hegelian dialectic where I came from. In fact, if you have earnest, good faith conversations about things, and I think that speaks to what Senator Brent was saying about, you know, and I have spoken with people from other departments who really like the essential education proposal that's being put forward. I don't think it's good for our department, and so I'm going to vote against it. And I would just say for this especially, I mean, I think there's been this kind of culture that has developed of we need to sort of smooth the pathway and play nice. And if something has already received approval from other levels, then we need to approve it just to make everything run smoothly. I would just say to everybody on this body, you know, vote on this motion based thinking of yourself as representing and advocating for your department and the students in your department and potential students, undeclared students who might want to be in your major. Is this drop to 30 hours and move the pathways beneficial for your department or your college? Then vote yes. If it is not, then vote no. I mean, like, I think especially now that, and thank you, Senator Yoder, for what you said, but I'm also glad you withdrew the motion. So now let's just do an up or down vote and actually vote based on who we're representing.
We got a chat. Departments get to add from Senator Stevenson. Thank you. Departments get to add their own extra supporting courses. Social work feels like it is beneficial. Again, that's just kind of the flexibility that this program offers. Senator Howell?
I would like to agree with everything that Senator Matchway and Senator Yoder.
What's happening? All this agreement. What's up?
That conflict can be bad, right? We work things out by having an actual conflict rather than by suppressing dissent and by suppressing conflict. I just want to make a really quick point, which is that this is not going to go to the Board of Regents until February 25th is the date that I have in my calendar. Is that correct, Regent Novlin?
It is February.
It's in February. Exact date.
It's the February meeting.
Yeah. And there is a Faculty Senate meeting that will be on February 2nd. So if I'm a calendar person, so I have to, I do this. So if you or your committee would like to investigate and discuss something like what is the purpose of a BA at EKU. We have 2 months. Admittedly, there is a break in the middle of it, so there might be a lot of emails being done for this. But there is opportunity for additional comments and additional things that can be brought to the whole body at the February 3rd meeting.
And followed up by?
And followed up in time for the February 25th Regents meeting.
Perfect.
And other than that, was that a motion to just go ahead and vote for the thing now?
Yeah, that was that motion has been on the floor for
I was not.
We're still on the Senate. Wait, Senator Austin has the floor.
Yeah, just a quick clarification. So my understanding is that the state government's mandating 120 hours, right?
Yeah.
Or, but not the 30
hours. No. It's mandating the 120.
Okay.
But then that recent legislation is kind of hinting towards.
Yeah. So I think that's, I mean, I'll be voting against it for my department and for what I think is the kind of the reasons that Senator Yoder did. But I think, too, this is another one of those obey in advance kind of things. Like, they're going to make us do 30, then wait till they make us if we think it's a bad idea. But obviously, there's disagreement.
Sure.
So
sure.
I just want to make sure I understood that.
Yeah.
Where it's long. Because otherwise,
it's not a vote anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's all.
All right. So we will take it to question. Pending any other comments, which I didn't see any pop up. I think the last one was by Senator Stevenson talking about the flexibility of the program, and it should be posted.
I want to make sure I have it correctly. Right now, it still says vote on the essential education policy.
Vote to approve
okay.
essential education, the new essential education model.
Then yes.
P3 students, there was a comment that came through.
Yeah, that I sent the right vote in the email.
So it should be in your email. I think we're going to try to repost something.
In the chat. Yeah, that was for the final exam.
I'll delete that comment so it's not confusing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Unless you need to use it for your class.
I know, I'm going to walk in the door and my kids are going to be like, hopefully there's no school tomorrow. What's coming? Almost reminded me of that book. What's it called? The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. When teams don't want to engage in conflict, and actually conflict is a very good thing for high functioning organizations.
Yes, we teach a class in that. You guys should take it. CMS 325.
I love something.
Great class.
Going back to your Hegelian dialectics, Marx actually also talks about conflict being the motor force of society.
Yeah, we need to.
Sorry, that was CMS 325.
And that again is posted for everybody to vote on.
And there is 46%.
46 in?
No. 41% yay. Mm-hmm. And 6% are, or excuse me, 14% are abstaining. They're still coming in.
Okay. If that was a real-time thing that I could look at, it'd give me such anxiety on all of these things, even like attendance.
45 are in. 46% have said nay. 40% yay.
Okay.
13% abstain.
Is that everybody that's in?
I believe so.
Okay. So it looks like yes. We so it's 46% yay, 41% nay.
No, opposite. It's nay.
Fails. Yeah, 46% nay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm just saying 46% no.
Yes.
41% yes.
Correct.
13% abstain.
Abstain.
Got it. All right. So most of it.
Oh, 19 said yes and 21 said no. Very close.
So 21 no, 19 yes, and
six.
Six abstain.
And it ended up being 46.
Total of 46 votes. All right. We have that in a minute. With that, the item behind us, we're going to move to the 4-day instructional week. We're going to go ahead and tip my hat to the provost for talking about the instructional week. It was more about the planning that was coming through on how we're going to handle that. More information to come. We're planning for the spring lunch and learn with the president's office. If you have any topics that are at the top of your list or you'd like to be discussed, please go ahead and forward those on to Sabrina, myself, or Senator Howell. We'll make sure we take stock of those and send those to Ryan Wilson to plan out that agenda. Running meetings, again, this was my, I already covered in the beginning. I feel like I failed everybody in the beginning. Oftentimes we want to discuss things that aren't on the agenda, which is great. I failed you all in having a discussion go a little longer than needed because not all the key people were here at the meeting to actually have that discussion lead to anything. And to be more considerate of your time and to be more efficient in actionables moving forward, I want to make sure that if there's something you want to bring to the table, that we actually get it on the agenda so that way the people who need to be here are actually present at the meeting in some form or another. So if we're going to talk about policy work, make sure that the policy people are here. If we're going to talk about student affairs, make sure student affairs people are here. If we're going to talk about budget, finance, whatever it is, that I resource you all, staff, and Senate, however I can, to make sure that these conversations move forward in a productive manner. On that note, I want to thank Heather here. She came up with a great idea of creating a faculty Senate, a resource, a guide, parliamentary procedures, kind of like a quick little one pager that we can give everybody so we kind of know the process and procedures of running meetings. It'll also be introduced into what I'm trying to build out as a new faculty senator welcome packet. We'll go ahead and work on that potentially over the break and implement it likely next academic year to make sure that's in place. Moving to ongoing business, this is where I'm going to rest on, and I'm sorry to call you out on the spot, but I actually remembered to get the right links this time, and I see the smile on your face, so I feel like I did something positive today. Update to Faculty Senate bylaws. I'm going to hand it over to Senator Bishop Ross. The two things that we're going to be talking about is, one, the move to a hybrid meeting, which created a series of logistics that is a little bit more complex than we were aware of, and then the AEP faculty representative criteria. So on point one, we'll go ahead and send it over to Senator Bishop Ross, and there's the link there for everybody to see, and I've highlighted everything that you need to be purview to. For the first one, it's actually all the way at the back of the bylaws. There's gonna be an appendix that she worked on, and I will yield the floor.
Well, I think you pretty much said everything that I was gonna say. Except that now everyone hopefully has had a chance to look over both of these things. We can vote on them separately if anyone has objections or something like that. But the hybrid meeting, the entire rules committee worked on that. I do not want to take solo credit for that. That was a hard fought battle. To get through all that stuff. But if there's any questions or comments, this comes from committee and XC approved it, so it should be ready for vote unless anyone has questions or comments that we need to discuss.
And Senator Bishop Ross, correct me if I'm wrong, but most of what's in the newly added appendix comes from the newly revised Roberts rules. It's not departing from actual procedures to begin with.
Yes. So the way Roberts rules is written, the version of Roberts rules that we use does not have anything about hybrid meetings, online meetings, telephone meetings, things like that. So they have an appendix that they made that have six different scenarios and suggested language for us to use for those things. Well, none of them was a hybrid meeting. So we took online meeting language and the traditional in-person meeting language and worked out something that works for people being on Zoom and also, or whatever platform, if we have to stop using Zoom and go to Teams, whatever platform we end up using, if it's not Zoom or if it is Zoom. And most of these are the procedures we're already using. It just sort of puts them into policy because before we were not really following Robert's rules of order. So now with this in place, we should be for our hybrid meetings.
All right, thank you. Senator Diekman's got her hand raised, sorry.
I would like to move that we vote on the appendix for the bylaws as written by the Rules Committee.
All right. Do I hear a
point of order?
Point of order by
is
Senator.
It, is
not
my understanding that we're voting on these separately.
Separately. So
okay.
Right. So she actually, as Senator Deacon just talked about, we're only voting on the addendum, the appendix regarding the hybrid meetings.
Okay.
Senator Howell?
I just have a very quick clarification question. Point three, signing in and out. Members shall identify themselves as required to sign in to the really part I'm interested is but shall sign out upon departure before adjournment. Have we established like literally how we're going to do signing out? Is that just a disconnect from the meeting, or do we need to inform the parliamentarian that we're leaving?
So if you leave, this only applies to if you're leaving before the end of a meeting, I think. Yes. So technically, if you leave before the end of a meeting, you should let the parliamentarian or I'm not sure if we want it to be. This is something that the parliamentarian, the IT committee and rules need to work on who we need to tell. But you should inform either the secretary, the parliamentarian, the person who's in IT who sends us emails to vote that you have left so that after you're gone, you do not receive any more emails to vote. So this really just applies to people who are online in the hybrid format who would get an email. Well, I guess the in-person people, we all vote electronically, right? So if you leave a meeting early, we need to decide who all those people that need to be informed are that you are leaving so that your email is removed from the list that gets to vote. That's the issue there.
And just to build that out logistically, the way the easiest way this would happen would be you would post something or make it known in the meeting space to the secretary, who we can then communicate that with parliamentarian and IT, just given the logistics of how things are set up, that would be the most implementable until we refine the process moving forward. And then I see a hand from Senator, my apologies, DeLage?
DeLage, close enough. Thank you. Just a quick question on point 11, video display for ASL. I'm assuming that is only if a senator has indicated they are needing that assistance.
I'm not sure.
I would think so, because or otherwise, wouldn't we been having that in place for in-person meetings as well?
Right. And so far, when we've had ASL interpreters, we have a special process in Zoom for pinning them at the top with the speaker so that the ASL interpreter is always visible to those who need it. So I believe that is on a by need basis.
Thank you. That answered my question about the pinning. I appreciate you.
Okay.
All right. So we're taking this to, sorry.
Oh,
Senator Satini.
Don't we have to have a second?
I was going to ask
him. Please have like these little points of clarification. So
yeah,
do I hear a second? Discussion. Yeah. But
I thought it came with a second already. My apologies.
No. So do we hear a second to vote on the appendix to hold hybrid meetings? Thank you.
Now I have a friendly amendment.
Amendment.
On point three, about the raise hand, and this is very minor, but not point three. Where does it talk about the raise hand?
Point seven.
That's making assumptions about, because we're all used to using Zoom, but we might not always be using Zoom. And so it either might not have a raise hand function or it might not be working, which I've also seen happen at meetings. So to not sort of disenfranchise senators who can't get that to work, maybe write in a second option. And one that I've frequently seen is have a set phrase in the chat that a senator can type, like stack is often used to represent the one of you recognized, just as a suggestion to add in redundancy, because that's an important point that if a senator is online but can't be recognized because they can't get the raise hand function to work, that is a problem.
There we go. Made a note on the actual appendix for us.
That the Rules Committee definitely will accept that friendly amendment. Just in case we end up on Teams or something where, or some other platform that doesn't have a raise hand feature.
Any other discussion items?
Yes.
Senator Satina.
The whole chat feature, it seems like that's, people are always sitting in chats and you're responding to them. Are they don't have the floor or anything, but you're taking time out of the agenda.
And that's when we talked about the logistics of how this is done versus the bylaws, while you're in person and a hybrid meeting is a little bit more complex and nuanced. Than,
so you shouldn't accept any chats unless they've been given the floor, essentially.
That is correct. You should not be chatting. If you have a question, we need some feature for raise your hand. You should raise your hand and not just type questions in chat. You have to raise your hand, wait to be recognized, and then you can type your question in chat or speak if you can't
unmute yourself. Like Senator Merrick just posted, I have a question. I can't raise my hand. So Senator Merrick.
Yes, thank you. So my question was back about the interpreter for the ASL. I know there are some people that attend the faculty senate that are not actual senators that might need an interpreter. So I don't know if the Zoom will always allow closed caption. If not, they would need an interpreter available.
I have that noted for us moving forward. Thank you. Any other discussion items? Hands. Seeing none, we'll take
a question.
Question from
Senator. All the question.
That's what I'm getting to there, Senator Steen.
I'm sending it out now. We already have 31, and it's 96% yes.
What's the number on that?
33 people have voted yes.
That motion passes. So thank you for your work on that, Senator Bishop Ross, and the Rules Committee. We'll go to the second point, which is revisiting the AAUP representative criteria. This was something that was brought up actually last academic year. It was brought forward on multiple fronts. One, when you read the bylaws, the very first introduction part of it reads that to be a member of faculty senate, that you need to be a faculty member at EKU. The AAUP rep currently is an external ex officio member, if that's the best way to put it. The other question came about was, would it be beneficial for senate to have the AAUP member be a part of our faculty body, so that way they are more in line with kind of what's going on at the university level, that they've got their pulse on things and can inform decision making or guidance to external resources like our state level president. Would that be more beneficial than what's currently in place? So one, it's a bylaws question, and two, it's what's the most efficient given everything coming through the university. The alternative argument is that it's more beneficial to have somebody who is not affiliated with the university, so it's more of a detached entity, so that they can offer more of an objective assessment of what's going on, that they're not so ingrained with the university, whether it's for the faculty side, the administrative side, that you actually have a more value-neutral position to weigh in on topics. So with that moving forward, there was a few emails that came through, a couple of questions and comments to see if we can't address or revisit what this policy looks like. So Senator Bishop Ross and the Rules Committee again visited this part of the bylaws and proposed the current iteration that we're looking at. I have it posted up on the screen that first it be amended so that our AAUP rep is a member of the faculty body. The first iteration was that they were a faculty member as well as faculty senate, and we wanted to provide a hybrid, right? We didn't want somebody who is part faculty senate to give that objective, moving more towards the neutral assessment. So we, during the two faculty senate meetings ago, got rid of that option. So now it's just a faculty member at EKU that still serves as an ex officio member to the eight or the Rights and Responsibilities Committee. If that person cannot be found at the university level, we just kind of default to the current policy we have in place. So we would find an external member like our state president of the AAUP chapter that would serve in until we can restaff that position. So that's the current policy that is being revisited. And again, thank you to Senator Bishop Ross and the Rules Committee. With that, I hear a motion to vote on the newly revised AUP criteria for faculty senate representation. And Senator Diekman.
I move to vote on the AAUP faculty representative criteria from the Rules Committee.
Thank you, Senator Diekman. Do I hear a second? Senator Satimi, moving to discussion. Senator Notchwell.
I will strongly suggest we vote this down because, as chair, co-chair of the Rights and Responsibilities Committee, and I'm also an AAUP member of our chapter, this ex officio position was created over a decade ago as parts of Rights and Responsibility to ensure that there would always be AAUP representation from our chapter here at EKU on that committee. And if you don't know, AAUP, American Association of University Professors, their bread and butter, their wheelhouse is academic freedom and tenure protection. So, I mean, that is literally why the organization exists and why it's important that their voice should be heard on Rights and Responsibilities Committee. And I think the intention by creating the ex officio position was very much to highlight somebody who's in our chapter and connected to the university, but also can act independently of Senate politics and internal politics in the university. Like the whole point, and I hear what Senator Brent is saying about somebody who's connected and has their pulse on the university, what's happening, but you also want somebody who has objective distance and is able to provide guidance in terms, especially in terms of matters of tenure protections and academic freedom, where at times the administration may be compelled to be suppressing those things or are acting against the interests of the faculty. And so we happen to have in our, just to say this, in our chapter, you know, we have a retired librarian, Nancy McKinney, who is also the current statewide president of AAUP. And that's a really valuable resource to have. She has a historical connection with the university, but she also has a strong connection with the statewide and indeed nationwide structure of the AAUP. So, I mean, I don't see where sort of limiting, I think we should leave it as is, where the AAUP chapter gets to determine who the representation on the Rights and Responsibilities Committee is, and all they have to be is a member in good standing of the EKU AAUP chapter, that putting any kind of restrictions on this seems to me to be limiting the advocacy power of the position. And I do want to highlight, it is an ex officio position. This is not a voting member. So that we already have all the other members of the committee who are by definition members of faculty senate who have that close connection with the current goings on at the university. So that's my, I'm just strongly advocating that we vote against this one.
Senator Satimi?
Question, what would the AAUP representative on the committee, what would their purpose be?
Pointing out when we see policies come across that are contrary to AAUP's statements on tenure and academic freedom. And we have been active recently. I mean, this is my point, John, is that, or Senator Satimi, sorry, like that we are at a moment where this is actually really vital that we have objective, detached, somebody there who isn't afraid to speak out when they see something happening, because they don't necessarily have the sense of being caught up in the moment of being an actual faculty senate member, or maybe coming up for tenure. You know, we can appoint somebody to this position who is sort of free of all of those potential interests.
Now, out of my own ignorance, what would prevent our own EKU president, Lisa Kay, from reaching out to somebody who's at the state level like Nancy to do that?
The current president of our AEP chapter, Lisa Kay, just to clarify.
Yes.
You just promoted her to president.
Yeah.
I just clarified.
So, like, if she's got the pulse on everything going on and she knows all the nuanced arguments and the positions and all the things happening, what would prevent our chapter from just reaching out to the state and still having now two levels of support?
Nothing except capacity. I mean, that's a really good example, because Lisa Kay is so desperately busy anyway, that if you see what I'm saying, like, she absolutely could, but this is why I'm saying having the AAUP chapter make that determination about who would be best in that position from the chapter. You know, I would be hesitant for Lisa Kay to fill that position precisely because she carries so many other duties. You know, you need somebody there who can be sort of laser focused on just putting forth what the interests of AAUP as a professional body protecting our academic freedom.
Following this, so then my next question then is, somebody who's outside the university, can they provide that laser focus on things we're going through?
Again, I mean, our current ex officio member is not outside the university. They're a retired member of the university.
But they're not here.
You want to get into the question.
Yeah, that's how it's being brought to me, is if we need somebody
right.
And they are retired.
Yeah. But a lot of our retired faculty have even more investment in the well-being of the university.
For some reason, I can't pull this.
Current faculty.
Senator Diekman, I see your hand raised. You have the floor.
Thank you. So I'm confused by Senator Nakwe's objection, because as I'm reading the rules, and you don't have the same, if you could scroll down to, I don't know what page it is,
that
has the highlighted stuff. But what it says is that there will be this liaison, and the liaison, I'm waiting until you get there. There it is. That the liaison will be selected by the AAUP EKU chapter, and that first priority will be given to someone who is a full-time faculty member. And if we can't find a full-time faculty member, then we're going to put in somebody who's not a full-time faculty member. So nothing in this says that it has to be someone from Faculty Senate.
But it's, was that a question? I don't want to speak out of turn.
So I guess it's both a question and a clarification. What I heard you say was that your objection was that we were going to put somebody from Faculty Senate as priority in this position, not what the document actually said. Confused by your objection.
This is Senator Nakwe. I apologize then. That wasn't the implication. But what it nevertheless does is it restricts who can serve as the ex officio member, which I think goes against the original intent behind creating that position, which was that it should be have some level of connection, because it has to be somebody that's from our chapter, the EKU chapter, but has a great deal of agency and independence in terms of who actually fulfills that role.
All right. So Senator Satimi.
So the person from AAUP, anybody can go to these meetings, right? I mean, they're not closed to the public.
Yes, that's a good reminder. Yes, these are all open meetings by state law. Yes.
Right, and so an AEUP representative can always be there.
Yep.
At any time.
And
they may not be able to speak at the time, but they can take notes and say, okay, this is what I saw, and this is what's going against what we want to do. I mean, do we actually even need to have this, or maybe just somebody on the committee can be a liaison if the AAUP decides to send somebody there. Or
I can pass it.
I was just going to say, this is Cassie again. Just one more thing was that while there was efforts made to collaborate with R&R, we didn't get a chance to meet either. And that was the other just concern.
Okay.
Is that we don't know. I agree. I don't know if that language is needed, but we also didn't get a chance to collaborate. None of us were available in the. So that was the other concern.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then Senator Merrick, I see that you have a statement.
Yes, I'm sorry. I can't raise my hand for whatever reason. I just would like to back up what Nokwe is saying. I think the representation from an AAUP person is invaluable because it is like, I know she's retired from here, but she's a non-biased and she has brought a lot of good points and things that, you know, we're unaware of because we are here. They know some things that we don't know because, again, she's retired from here, but say if she wasn't, like, they bring things to the table that the other members are not going to have. So she has been very helpful in looking at the history for the policy 1.1.1, which we all say we don't, you know, that's muddy water. But anyway, and shared governance, like her information and things that she has brought to the table have been invaluable in my personal opinion.
Senator Howell?
This is Senator Howell. I just have a question for Senator Bishop Ross. My notes are insufficient from past meetings. Why did this issue come up in the first place?
It was on our charges.
It came up last academic.
So this came from outside rules, at least, but someone wanted us to make changes, and these were the suggested changes.
Senator Lau?
I think earlier in the fall, we were upset when the Board of Regents tried to put put constraints on who we choose in the future for our faculty regent and whether that regent could be reelected. And we felt that it should be up to us as an entity to choose who we want representing us. And so I would support Senator Nokwe's position, let AAUP decide who they feel best to represent themselves.
Any other discussion items? All right, we'll take it to questions. So vote to approve of the amendment to the AAUP criteria.
Voting on things.
I'm having a little trouble sending this one. I got it. The email wouldn't send it. Did it go out?
Yes.
I just got it.
Thank you.
Okay. I have got it.
Standby should be posted to your email and I don't see it in the chat yet, but it is now in the chat. Your position would give you such anxiety.
I'm getting better at it, but same. Sorry, 64% have said no.
64% no.
Yes. So that's 25 votes for no. 26 now.
Got it. So the motion does not pass. The criteria for the AUP representative stays as it was. Thank you for that. All right, going to the next item on the agenda. policy work. We already touched about that. Faculty Senate composition. Again, I just wanted to touch base on this because there's a little bit of movement on when this was actually going to happen. The actual spreadsheet that the committee worked on so tirelessly is posted for you to see. We kind of determined instead of interrupting the composition of Faculty Senate in the middle of the year, that this is something that we can work to resolve going into the end of the academic year and starting fresh with the academic year 2026-27, that we can actually start with the blank slate. We know exactly what numbers need to be hashed out. We can actually get votes, fill committee members and standing committees going into the academic year. That's the only update on that front. I didn't want to leave it hanging on it. No new updates regarding liaisons between the faculty and staff meetings. Planetarium updates, I don't think there was anything too significant to report. Bridget Noblet, anything on the planetarium that's a major update from last time?
No.
Okay. Moving forward, collaborative learning informational sessions. There's none brought forward at this time, whether FICTL or you. There needs to be an informational session with OASIS and the emergence of AI in our landscape. Again, if any topics come to mind, please do not hesitate to reach out to myself, Senator Howell, or Sabrina, so we can take stock of those and get those in place for everybody moving forward. And we'll go on to standing committee reports. As always, everything that I report here in Faculty Senate is kind of what we do at exec. And I will pivot to the Academic Quality Committee. And again, it was just asked that you talk kind of what your charges were and where we stand moving into the middle of the academic year. Senator
Albright.
Yeah, Albright, sorry about that.
Regarding the Faculty Senate headcount, libraries, if that's on purpose, let me know and I'll go home.
No, we definitely need you here. We're more than merrier right now. We'll get that fixed. All right, Academic Quality Committee.
All right, we posted our minutes from our last meeting in the Faculty Senate folder. We've been working on, it's like six or seven different.
You've got some heavy lifting.
We've got some heavy lifting to do. And we're making progress on just about everything on that list. I encourage you to read through it. I don't want to read through everything that we've talked about unless you really want to.
No, so another question I want to ask, is there anything that we can do to help facilitate that work going into the back half of the academic year?
I was going to put a bug in the Faculty Senate here that we have a really broad charge and we're asked to comment on a lot of different issues. And we may have a proposal in the spring. I don't know. This is some speculation here to increase the size of the meeting. We just need more manpower is what it feels like. And we're losing a member to maternity leave in the spring. So we maybe need a replacement first thing in the spring.
Okay.
But it is a burdened committee.
Absolutely.
And we'd like to see maybe a little bit of relief.
It seems like everything that hit this academic year just fell right on AQC's shoulders. Pending anything else, we'll move on to budget.
We posted the report in the agenda, and the two areas that I want to just kind of focus on and highlight. One, we began looking at the discussion of net revenue by program. It turns out that the university has already done some significant work in this area and developed a dashboard, which was shared with the committee. Bethany Miller, who developed that dashboard, was not able to meet at our last meeting. She is scheduled to be at the January meeting, so we'll have more information on that. Second thing is Senator Liddell did an excellent job doing several things. Number one, pushing to get more detailed financial reports, and also then to do an initial analysis on athletic expenditures and revenues. That was a preliminary report, and so we're gonna come back to that and do further investigation with that.
Thank you. I did see a comment from Senator Stumbo. I don't know if you heard earlier, but the comment was, I wanted to follow up on the motion carried from November 3rd at the Senate meeting regarding the markup of regulation changes. We took that to problem solvers. We took it to academic affairs. I reached out to the council's office. Again, that's something that we're going to action moving forward. However, given it being the end of the year and the SACS report being due, that the council's office said that this is something that would receive more bandwidth and proper support moving into January. That's why if you scroll up to the top of the agenda, It actually says postponed to January. That's what that information item was about. So that conversation will start up with priority at the beginning of the year. I just want to make sure I got to that piece of information. And we'll move on to elections and university nominations.
We are currently working on, this is Senator McDonald. We are currently working on a document to create a document for new faculty orientation. And we are also currently trying to update our list of any vacancies for Faculty Senate.
Got it. And then what we'll do is we'll work closely with you, Sabrina and I, because that's something that we need to do a little better at moving into the end of the year. That way, moving into the summer, we're not trying to track down alternates and replacements for not only the overall roster, but the standing committees. Moving into the back half of the year, is there anything that we can do to support your work?
I'm sure that probably at the beginning of the spring semester, we will have some requests, but I think at the moment, we're just kind of making our preliminary plans at the moment.
All right, sounds good. And IT? Do we still have to do the authentication? Is it still a thing?
I am meeting with somebody from IT on Wednesday about that. Yes. And we're hoping to have an update soon. The big update, though, is that one concern was brought forward, so everything else is pending, is that there are some advising emails that are being sent out that looks like they're being sent from the faculty.
Yeah.
And we're not like collecting a vote or anything, but to save time, am I allowed to just send this update out in an email and people can express their concerns to us as a committee?
So I actually reached out about that because I also received it through other channels. And what's happening is, and this is broad brushstrokes, I'm probably going to misspeak, and if I do, I can clarify it later. But in general, it's an advising procedure that was pushed out through the dean's offices. And it's a practice that's implemented that faculty who have advisees, emails are going out on the faculty's behalf with their email reaching out to their advisees. They have found that it's a great retention tactic. It instead of coming from a general email, it's coming out from faculty who the student knows. It's been well received by students. It's something that academic affairs actually push out through the dean's office. It should have been communicated to faculty advisors. And when they're tracking the data on it, it is an effective practice. It's a retention piece. It's a recruitment piece for departments. It's something that is implemented and communicated through. So it's nothing that's a glitch. The follow-up concern that I've heard is, why can't we not just send it not through faculty's email? When I followed up on that, it was because data show that when it comes from a generic university email, that its impact on communicating to students, having retention efforts, feeling more like, hey, they're reaching out to me, the care, the trust, the collaboration between the student and the advisor isn't necessarily there, that when it comes to the faculty email, that it's a lot more effective. That's the response that I got on that front.
We just keep getting messages about the concern for transparency.
Okay.
And that sometimes faculty are receiving replies and they don't even know anything about the message. So I was hoping I have a doc I can just put in the chat if people want to further express our concerns. It's not like a formal vote or anything.
Absolutely. And that's, I gotcha. And that's something when I talked to academic affairs about, that's something apparently that was communicated very explicitly through dean's offices that should have been communicated down. So if for whatever reason you get an email from a student and you're like, hey, where's this coming from? I think that's more of a, there's a disconnect in the communication line somewhere from my understanding. Other than it being an IT because it's an email thing, I don't know if that's like a faculty senate thing rather than a communication blow that's got to come down from administration through colleges and departments. But if you've posted that, is it like a comment doc?
Exactly.
Oh, so there's a comment doc posted in the chat. I don't know if you pushed it through email as well. Go ahead.
I have something for R&R as well.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. So for R&R, the update, we have a couple things pending, but the thing we need feedback on is that, as you know, the faculty grievance liaison has been implemented, but there have been some concerns about, the faculty grievance liaison is not an advocate or a mediator. So we have found that NKU has a faculty advocate. And we would like to, before we propose anything special, we'd like to have some bullet points of what the concerns of not having a mediator and only having faculty frequently are, and then possibly getting your feedback on the proposal of a faculty advocate, which would be nominated by the faculty at large. Maybe they would have like a 25% course release. Again, this is just something for your feedback before a formal vote, with the concern being that the faculty grievance liaison, again, it's not a mediator or advocate. There's concerns about neutrality since this is run by human resources. And so there's not like, it's not always perceived as a neutral party. And so we were hoping that faculty, your input on a possible faculty advocate before anything escalates to a grievance. So I'll send that in the chat as well.
And to give some context, this is something that we started working on like a few years ago, and then it picked up work again about a year ago. With the exception of the faculty grievance liaison, the concern was that gave the optic of it enacts a formal process, which can actually kind of restrict or hinder people coming forward and talking about concerns. That when we met over the summer, there's other institutions, I believe NKU is one that has something similar, to where there's more of an informal liaison that you can ping ideas off of, and then should it be something that has to be reported, that's something that's got to go to the university. But there's somebody at the faculty senate level, usually it's a member of leadership that acts as a liaison that can work with the actual faculty grievance liaison if more formal matters are mandated to be reported or things need to go forward. It's basically like a faculty triage avenue before an actual policy gets enacted. So to kind of build out context, that's where that kind of came from. So I thank you for that. And I would be remiss, Senator Houston, I do see your hand up. I do apologize on that.
No problem. Can you hear me?
We do hear you.
Okay, so I just wanted to backtrack on the issue about the advising letters going out with faculty names not composed by faculty members. This was an issue brought up at our College of Business meetings, and we were later informed that we were the only group of faculty that seemed to have a problem with it or complain about it. So I would just encourage senators to bring this issue back to your departments and definitely encourage them to give feedback. So I'm not really sure that many faculty are aware of this policy. Maybe they are. But again, I would encourage senators to share it with their faculty.
I appreciate that, Senator Houston. And we'll, again, the comment was to make sure that we take this information back to our departments, and if it's not coming down from the administration and reaching faculty, that maybe Faculty Senate can provide an avenue through which this information gets communicated. I also see Senator Salmons, your hand up as well.
Yes, our department definitely had discussion over these emails going out, because students were contacting back and saying, hey, I got this email from you, but we were not informed about it. So I guess it does come back from that dean's area. And although, as you said, the recruitment and the retention from this effort is up, it's just another transparency thing where we just aren't informed that emails were going out with our names on it. You know, at first, a lot of folks thought they might be phishing emails or whatever. So that's the concern. And definitely Senator Houston, the Department of Parks, Recreation, Exercise, and Sports Science had that same, very much same concern.
All right. Thank you so much for that. And we'll move on to welfare.
Yeah. So we welfare committee, actually, this is Senator Knoxway. Welfare committee also had not academic quality, but we also had a pretty hefty list of charges for this year. So we spent the last meeting prioritizing what we were going to focus on. And going forward, before the February meeting, we're going to do sort of study. What we came up with is our first charge is to look at faculty compensation, benefits, and things like that. And the main conversation we kept coming back to was the bit of trivia that on most of our employment contracts, service is listed as 10% of the FTE hours, right? And so one of the things we're going to look at is total number of faculty over the last 5 years at the university. In other words, what's the population of faculty? What's the population of full-time, tenure track faculty? Our suspicion, as we look at the numbers, is that this is going to be going down, But of course, administrative duties laden on the faculty will be going up. And trying to figure out a way of addressing that problem we decided on is going to be one of our next priorities.
Is there anything that we can help facilitate that? Do you need data?
I will be reaching out to you, yes about data.
Yeah, I think I know who we can get you in contact with on that one. Thank you for that. I do see Senator Bishop Ross, your hand is up.
Yeah, just from Rules Committee, I do have one extra thing that has nothing to do with what we've already talked about, but the other document that Rules is in charge of is internal procedures. So if you are the chair or a co-chair of a committee, I need you to look through those internal procedures. They are on the Faculty Senate website. Look through those as a committee, see if you need to make any changes, and send those to me or Senator Stevenson, my co-chair with Rules, by February 15th, if at all possible, so that if we need to make those changes, we can get them done and voted on before the end of our academic year.
Senator Ross, thank you for that reminder. My apologies that I missed that line on the agenda. With that, we have approximately a minute and a half. We get to the last item before adjournment, so I dare to ask the question. Any final questions or comments? Seeing none, do I hear a motion to adjourn? Moved by Senator Day, second by Senator Satimi. Discussion no, and we are adjourned at 5:28. I thank you all so much for a great and productive meeting. I really enjoyed the conversation. Again, if you ever need anything, please, please reach out and let us know. You all have a great day.
Thank you. Y'all take care.
Bye.
Yeah. I threw it. I didn't think it was on. I think